What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, it's a great one today. You know, for a change, foreign affairs analyst David Rothkopf returns, and Paul Rykoff, Iraq vet and host of the Independent Americans podcast, join me to discuss Trump's latest war. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again. So President Donald J. Trump has taken us to war. This is his eighth this term. But by far the biggest one. We are at war with the horrible regime in Iran, a regime that we have decapitated, maybe literally, but I'm guessing Supreme Leader Khamenei was probably just crushed. I would have been fine with that if we just stopped there. That wouldn't have changed much. They would just have selected a new Supreme Leader and probably retaliated with some terrorist attack. Thank God we waited till after the Super Bowl. But we are at war. We are not exactly sure why. The goal of this war does seem to change. Trump did at first say the goal was regime change, but Pete Hegseth is now saying, no, not regime change. It's to eradicate the nuclear program, but maybe not that either. I mean, didn't we obliterate it? Are they enriching? All we know for sure is that Trump says we're going to be there for about 4 weeks or maybe longer. And maybe we will put boots on the ground. In the meantime, our Air Force and Israel's are continuing our air assault, which we are very good at, though it's expensive. It's about $1 billion a day. Now, for those of you who have been following this war like I have, it's very confusing because we don't really seem to have an official reason or a coherent strategy. We don't know if the folks on the street, the ones who were out protesting in January and getting murdered, we don't know where this is going to end up for them. And I can tell you for sure, Donald Trump doesn't know either. So David Rothkopf and Paul Rykoff and I are going to do our best to sort through the uncertainty, although Paul seems to be a little bit more certain than David and I, because Paul is absolutely convinced that Trump is crazy and is going to do whatever he wants. David and I are a little more measured. We know that Americans don't like this war at all. Only 23% support it. And as we take more casualties, which we will, Republicans running for office will be begging Trump to end this thing. It's an uncertain one today. You know, for a change. Hi, David. Hi, Paul. Paul used to be my guest on my Air America show over 20 years ago. Talking about the Iraq War.
Hi, Al. It's good to see you again. I feel like I'm in a fucking time capsule, and we're back at Air America in 2004, and we're having a lot of these same conversations. And you know, you and I remember you going, you know, on USO trips, and you've been a great supporter for veterans. And you know, a key part of your platform was running against the Iraq War.
So, am I the only one here who likes Supreme Leader Khamenei? I don't know why people are so down on him. I mean, he was, you know, not a bullshitter. You knew right where he stood. But actually killing him and so many members of the leadership is, of course, very good thing. We've had this long, entangled history with Iran. And can you just talk a little bit about that and the context of where we are now? When exactly did the U.S. fuck up our relationship with Iran and fuck up Iran? And I'm guessing when we installed the Shah, right, in 53?
We, you know, that's when we started screwing up the relationship with Iran, because we went in and we removed the prime minister and we brought in this guy, the Shah, that we thought would better represent our interests. Oil companies and others were pretty happy with that. But of course, as it turned out, the Shah was brutal, authoritarian, and corrupt. And so it opened the door for anti-Shah movements to emerge. Mm-hmm. And by the late 70s, they took the form of an Islamic revolution. And of course, some of your listeners may remember that when that took place, they took over the U.S. Embassy. They held people in the U.S. Embassy hostage. And, you know, since 1979, Iran has been viewed, you know, sort of high atop our enemies list. You know, there is another aspect to this story, which I think is important, because 1979 was nearly 50 years ago, and they've been an enemy ever since. They've been the world's leading state sponsor of terror ever since, and we haven't gone to war with them in that time. And there's a reason. Because they're big. They connect to a lot of places. Going to war with them can produce a lot of outcomes beyond our control. And that's hence where we are now.
Yeah, hence our show. The military aspect of this has been going pretty well, right? Am I right about that, David?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you're evaluating the military aspect. If you mean, you know, planes have been doing what they've been asked to be doing, largely, three have been shot down. And targeting what they've been supposed to be targeting, largely. We have some 1,000 Iranian civilians dead. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, the way you evaluate military action is whether it advances the national security interests of the United States. And we're a long way from knowing whether that's going to happen. I mean, this war could spread throughout the region as it has. It could lead to expanded terrorism activity, which it very well could lead to a new global nuclear arms race. That doesn't sound so good to me. It's already cost $5 billion, which is, you know, sort of enough to pay 2 million kids SNAP benefits for years. It's a long way from determining whether this is working well militarily. And in fact, I think there are a lot of signs that suggest that from a military perspective, as well as from a geopolitical perspective, this was a big mistake.
I think so, too. But the War Powers Act didn't work. I mean, we're going ahead, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the War Powers Act never works. You know, Democrats, Republicans, nobody pays any attention to that. It's just the question of how he ignores the War Powers Act. And this is really one of the most egregious missteps based. Look, we don't have, you know, I wrote two books on the NSC. We don't even have a functioning NSC. There's no policy process working here. He doesn't take advice from anyone. I was talking to a senior diplomat from one of our closest allies last night. They didn't know on Wednesday that this was happening. So two, three days before it happened, they didn't know it was happening. This is, as the FT wrote about it yesterday, not a war of choice, it's a war of whim. And the stakes are huge.
So the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRCG, they're killing demonstrators on the street now? Maybe they aren't demonstrators because of the bombing, huh?
There's a lot of killing going on. We're responsible for some of it. They, you know, killed 30,000 people in the past month for demonstrating. So surely we might expect that from them as well. And, you know, there have been 2,000 missiles launched around the region. So, you know, and that's produced some death too. So I think there's plenty of responsibility for unnecessary deaths to go around.
Now, Trump said he was going to keep us out of wars. This is, of course, what he said during the last election. And in fact, he said that Harris would get us in a war, right? And since he's come to office, we've gone to war 8 times or something like that. Is that right?
Yep.
Well, it's 8 if you don't count the United States. I mean, he has been sending troops into U.S. cities as well.
Oh, okay.
And Iran twice, essentially. So Iran gets double counted.
exactly.
That's true. Okay. But that's one country. It looks like we're going to have a new Ayatollah. I mean, this is, there's been contradiction about whether this is about regime change or not, right? There's been a lot of contradictions from the administration.
Yeah. I mean, they've given a bunch of reasons, you know, in the couple of days after this started, we were doing it to end the nuclear program. We were doing it to end the ICBM program. We were doing it to reduce risk among their proxies. We were doing it to produce regime change. We were doing it because we saw an imminent threat because the Israelis were going to attack them and then they would attack us. Although Trump then added to that and he said, well, actually, I told the Israelis to do it, which means, and this is kind of a first in modern warfare, the imminent threat we were responding to actually came from us. You know, Rubio came up with this convoluted thing. He said, well, there was going to be an imminent threat because we knew the Israelis were going to attack them. And once they attacked them, then the Iranians would strike back against our bases. So it made it look like the imminent threat was coming from the Israelis.
Trump contradicted that, right?
Right, because he wants credit. So he said, no, I told the Israelis to do it, which means, following Rubio's logic, that the imminent threat actually originated with Trump.
So how many protesters were killed in Iran in January, right? It was about, I've seen predictions of 30,000 or so. Who does that? Is that the Revolutionary Guard, or are there other troops that do that?
The Revolutionary Guard are the main force. There are also very large police forces throughout Iran who do this kind of thing. So it was a sweeping action of the kind they've done before. You know, nobody is saying that this is a great regime. The question is whether the United States has the right to go and launch a war against anybody anywhere because we don't like them.
Peter, do you have this clip? Trump talking to the Revolutionary Guard and the Iranian military, telling them that they'll get immunity if they ask for it. Do you have that?
I once again urge the Revolutionary Guard, the Iranian military, police, to lay down your arms and receive full immunity or face certain death. It will be certain death.
Okay. How does that get enforced? I mean, you get complete immunity even if you personally shot and killed 100 people.
I think there was more to the clip, Al. I think at the end he said you also get a job at ICE. You know, Ken Burns has been on my show a few times, and he always says, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this rhymes very loudly with where we've been before. And I think the thing I want to start with is it's so much worse than before. It's all so much worse than before because of all the pieces. But I think most of all, what I always want to focus on is that Donald Trump can do anything he wants with the most powerful military the world has ever seen. And nothing is stopping him. You asked how many countries. It's 9. And I have them. Somalia, Iraq, Yemen, Iran, someplace in the Caribbean. We don't know exactly where because they haven't told us. Remember the whole war crimes and September 2nd video that we never get to? Syria, Nigeria, Venezuela, Iran again. And he hit Ecuador. Those are military operations in each of those countries. Right? And now Ecuador. Does anyone in America realize that he conducted military operations against so-called narco terrorists in Ecuador the other night? Right. And here's what I think is really important now. He is all gas, no brakes. He is going as fast and as far as possible, and nothing's even slowing him down. And he's probably going to Cuba next. So I think the real seminal question here is, can anything even slow down the rampaging authoritarian president that we've got? Because our systems aren't built to do it. And he's just going so fast, challenging everyone to try to catch him. And they can't even keep up with where he is. I said this on my show. The Congress is like the mall cops of our democracy right now. Like, they can't even write tickets. They can't arrest anybody. They can't do anything. They just sit there and whine and complain. And I know the Republicans are obviously in charge, but the Democrats don't have a strategy either. And the real question we should have for all Americans are, how far is he going to go? Because this is a forever war now. It is a regional war. He said he wants to hit other places like Mexico, and you should believe him. He says he wants to invoke the Insurrection Act. You should believe him. And the thing I want to really highlight, Al, because, you know, I know a lot of folks support you from your time in the Senate. There are a lot of Democrats. I hope Republicans and independents listening. You know, there is this, the midterm elections is not enough of a circuit breaker. You can't wait until the midterm elections, because he can invade five more countries by then. Right. Think about what he's done just in the last 2 months. So there has to be a strategy to do something, whether it's revoke the funding at DOD like they have with DHS. Somebody launch a campaign to impeach him. You know, come up with something other than just going on MSNBC saying we're very upset and we're very angry, because this is not working for America.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Paul Rykoff and David Rothkopf. A thoughtfully built wardrobe comes down to pieces that mix well and last. That's where Quince shines. Premium fabrics, considered design, and everyday essentials that feel effortless to wear and dependable even as the seasons change. Quince has the everyday essentials I love with quality that lasts. Lightweight cashmere sweaters, short sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees in 100% Pima cotton, and European jersey linen. These are the versatile pieces that make a wardrobe actually work season to season. The cashmere is 100% Mongolian, the same stuff luxury brands use. The Pima cotton is long staple, which means it stays soft and doesn't pill. The European jersey linen is breathable and lightweight. Everything is built to hold up to regular wear and still look good. Their clothing is rated between 4.5 and 5 stars by thousands of people wearing it every day. And they only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. That's important here at the Al Franken podcast. And by cutting out middlemen and traditional markups, Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. The result, classic styles you love that hold up year after year. For example, I just ordered the Mongolian cashmere ribbed crew neck sweater in heather gray. If any of you want to embrace the Al Franken look, we can be warm and stylish together. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/franken for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/franken. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/franken.
When a booth gets crowded, it can be hard to find a quiet moment to sort through your own thoughts. Talkspace makes that easier. Talkspace connects you with a licensed therapist in your state through private messaging, live video, or audio sessions. Care is available every day, at any time, so support can fit your routine instead of taking it over. Choose a flexible plan that matches your needs and lifestyle, and if your needs change, you can switch providers at no extra cost. Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Back with David Rothkopf and Paul Rykoff. This isn't popular. I mean, we have like 23% support before this war, right? Something like that. Is he just daring the American people to vote the Democrats in the majority, and maybe definitely the House and very possibly the Senate?
I think there is a stunning failure of imagination in this country. And Trump has no failure of imagination. People assume he cares about polls. He is going as far and as fast as he can, I think, until his own personal time runs out, until he dies. He knows that he won't live forever. He knows J.D. Vance isn't going to be up for it, and Pete Hegseth isn't. Imagine how far ahead he'd be if Hegseth and Noam weren't fucking up all the time. Imagine if he had really competent people, right? But he
there's a trade-off.
Yeah, but I do think it's
he had some competent people in the first term.
But they are also on plan, right? They are on plan and ahead of plan. And that's really important, I think, especially for Democrats to appreciate and understand. Everybody who talked about Project 2025, Project 2025 is basically complete. That was year one. Project 2025, year one, was America. Project 2026 is North America, and Project 2027 might be the Middle East. It might be South America. He is continuing to go.
It seems like the Middle East is 26, actually.
Yeah. And maybe more. I mean, I think, like, to your point about, you know, you've been watching Iran. Yeah, we've been watching this story for 20 years. And the really important point is the lid is off now. And so, you know, Iran is now striking multiple countries. The Strait of Hormuz is shut down. Israel is now being blasted. And I think we have to brace for a new normal like we did after 9/11, where nobody's really safe anymore. This is the piercing of the great American bubble, right? We are not safe anymore overseas. Our diplomats are not safe. Our allies are not safe. Dubai is not safe. And I think it's only a matter of time before, you know, the Middle East looks like Ukraine and Kyiv. And it's just going to keep moving to the West. So there's a point where we could have Shahed drones hitting U.S. cities. That is a legitimate threat that we should be mentally and strategically and defensively preparing for. But I think, use that as an example, there's a stunning failure of imagination in this country to appreciate drone warfare is not just the future, it is the present. That is what war looks like now. It is the new terrorist attack. It is the new roadside bomb. And if you want to see what it looks like, look at Kyiv.
If I could interject here, I all those points are good points, and there's certainly things we should be concerned about. I'm a little bit concerned about the idea of promoting the idea that we're entering a new era of danger for the United States, although I think in many respects we are. And the reason is that what Trump is looking for as his ticket to be there as long as he wants is an emergency. And he is trying to find ways, and that's why Tulsi Gabbard is out there saying foreigners are meddling in the elections, and that's why they're putting troops in the cities, and that's why they're doing some of the things that they're doing. They're trying to find an excuse to delay elections, postpone elections, and so forth. And again, today, even as this war is going on, moments before we got started to record this, Trump posted on Truth Social, "The most important thing the Congress can do is pass the SAVE Act. This is the thing that will determine whether or not we have a future in America." And of course, everybody knows who's listening to this that the SAVE Act is the most extreme voter suppression act promoted in the United States in the modern era. And the entire purpose of it is to give Republicans an advantage, not let the Democrats take back these elections. And if you combine that with, you know, having, you know, Stephen Miller, who's referred to as the prime minister in the White House, determining that we're in an emergency and we have to send troops out and do all these emergency things in the election, are we going to have elections? Are they going to be free and fair? Seems super unlikely to me. And so I totally endorse what Paul is saying.
I'm not promoting this idea. I am explaining that this is the plan, mm-hmm. right? And both things can be true. We can face increased danger, and Trump can be using that as a tool. And I think that Trump is creating much of this danger. And it is a very real danger now. The question becomes, when there is, for example, a shooting in Austin this weekend that was allegedly politically motivated. If there are, for example, attacks on National Guard troops in D.C. when two were shot in the head, They are real, but he can also use them. And I think that is the plan we need to make Americans aware of, is that he wants to flex his authoritarian muscle. This is the plan, a foreign war that creates a national emergency that allows him to increase the hammer on the American people and stop the elections. That is the plan. And I think more Americans need to be aware of it. It's not accidental. And I think too often they dismiss him as crazy, or they dismiss him as deranged. Stephen Miller is a diabolically evil person, in my view, but he's on plan. He's getting what he wants. And I think the Department of Defense especially is the area we need to focus on, because Pete Hegseth is not just what the so-called Secretary of War. He is what I call the acting Secretary of Culture War. He is waging culture war in the Pentagon and then turning the Pentagon to be the instrument of the culture war in America and around the world, on everything from banning books to attacking Harvard, to removing rights to women. So if you want to see what the future of America could look like, it is the entire federal government looking like the Department of Defense run by Pete Hegseth.
Let's talk about the war and about how long this thing is going to go on. I do think that the American people are going to be really fed up with this very quickly. He's talked about putting boots on the ground, right?
Openly. They're not even dismissing it. And important to note too, Al, like, we have intelligence assets on the ground, right? And when we say boots on the ground, it's almost like an antiquated term, right? We had boots on the ground in Venezuela. We have boots on the ground in Ecuador, right? And this is part of the problem, is you don't have an administration that is candid about anything from boots on the ground to casualty numbers. Like last night, they released the 6th casualty. Okay. But they kind of released it. They said they weren't sure of the man, if it was him or not, because the person, frankly, was blown apart. So they issued this sloppy press release about the 6th American casualty. They couldn't even get that right.
Did his family get the family hurt?
This is how the family got the notification, is we're not sure it was him. They put his name out there. They didn't identify his picture. But the point is, there is no transparency, and they have removed the Pentagon press corps. They haven't been doing regular press briefings until recently. I think you're right. It is extremely unpopular, and it will get less popular. But he doesn't care. Now, the question is, will Republicans move?
Well, apropos of your point, though, just to go back to your point, the price of gasoline went up 22 cents in the first 3 days of this thing. It's going to continue to go up more. There is pressure there. You know, this thing is not going to go on in its current form if the administration can control it. And there's some question about that for more than a few weeks, because if it does, it makes the Republicans' terrible numbers for the midterms look worse. And so Trump's going to start getting people calling him saying, hey, buddy, let's change the subject. Because once you start a war, other people are able to author its next steps.
Do you think Trump bails? Or do you think he doubles down? You think he bails?
No. Look, I mean, there's a reason he's called Taco Trump, right? And he always chickens out. He tries to tie a ribbon on it. He has no stomach for this protracted war. But what's more, his base is abandoning him. Radio talk show hosts from, you know, Joe Rogan to Glenn Beck are abandoning him. And there's an election this year. And so his timing couldn't be worse, because, you know, war like this pushes up prices, pushes up oil prices.
Well, of course, the oil prices are going up because of Hormuz. And
Right. Exactly.
And people want, you know, this is what people want, are prices down.
Yeah. He said something else today, by the way, which I've got to flag it for you, because it was so choice. About this, he was asked about the son of Khamenei, who looks like the apparent successor to his father, the supreme leader. And Trump said, well, I don't like him. He's a lightweight, and I would like to have a hand in choosing whoever replaces him as the leader of Iran.
Really?
If there was ever a moment, you know, like, the hardliners in Iran and the pro-democracy forces in Iran can't stand each other. They're at a war. Thousands have died, right? But if there is one issue on which they agree, it's they don't want Donald Trump to choose the next leader of Iran. And yet he has no filter.
So is that Trump's way of saying that the next leader of Iran will be the Ayatollah. I mean, in other words, that's next leader of Iran is not going to be a civilian. I mean, he's given up on that, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, Trump likes authoritarians, right? He likes regimes where you get to pick the people and it just happens and there's no voting. You don't see a lot of talk about democracy here. Venezuela is the perfect example where supposedly we were doing regime change. We went in at considerable risk, arrested Maduro, brought him to the U.S. illegal. It was all illegal. And then his number two takes over and Trump's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. We'll stick with this regime. It's crazy, but it's because all he wants to do is leave his imprint. It's like he's walking through the woods and he wants to carve his initials on as many trees as he can.
This idea that he's kind of an egomaniac, which, I mean, that's an understatement, of course. I saw this thing where he gave a speech at the White House and he's honoring Medal of Honor winners. Okay. For some reason, he, while supposedly honoring them, just starts talking about how beautiful his ballroom is going to be.
And it will be. It'll be spectacular. It'll be the most beautiful ballroom. I believe it because I built many a ballroom. I believe it's going to be the most beautiful ballroom anywhere in the world.
Well, that's what those guys fought and sacrificed and their buddies died for, I'm sure.
Yes.
But he did this. You remember there was a meeting a couple of weeks ago and it was with a bunch of CEOs or something. And he stood up in the middle of the meeting and he walked to the window, dropped the subject, stared out at the ballroom and started talking about the ballroom again. And I go back to your point because I think it's such a good point. You know, he may not be a complete idiot, but he is going through some kind of mental breakdown in front of our very eyes. And he is not what either of us would call compos mentis at this moment. He's detached from reality.
He announced the war. Did it seem strange to you how he announced the war? That he went on Truth Social.
At two in the morning. Yeah, right.
You're right. I think he's kind of losing it. We talk about this, if there are casualties that he'll declare victory and leave. How far into the future this is? I mean, did he first set 4 weeks as this, or?
It's hard to say. At first they said a few days, then they said a couple of weeks, then they said 5 to 6 weeks. And now there's reports coming out of the Pentagon that they're planning on fighting through September. Now, I don't know what their calculus is there. Maybe, we'll end the war before the election and it'll look like we're peacemakers again. I mean, that doesn't seem like that's going to fly. We're also realizing this, it's costing $1 billion a day in its current form. If you send lots more troops in, it's going to cost a lot more than that.
And if the war expands, I mean, in which it may very well do.
That's right. Well, it seems likely to do. And, you know, I thought originally that what he was doing was moving military into the area in order to get leverage, in order to get a deal. It wouldn't be as good as the Obama 2015 nuclear deal, but it would be the Trump deal. And that's sort of a pattern he follows. But then the Iranians decided, no, we're not going to do that. And, you know, they responded again today also in an interesting way. They said, no, we're not negotiating. We're not reaching out to him. If you want to fight a war, we're ready to fight a war. And I think that's because they realize that we don't have the political will in the United States to back that for good reason. But I think they see a prolonged war as actually playing to their advantage.
Hmm. So if we put troops, actual troops, in on the ground, if we start having troops get killed there, and we already have had lost 6 service members in Kuwait, and that's them bombing our base there. If we have a lot of troops there, are the American people going to abide that?
I don't think so, because I think there will be a lot of casualties if we have a lot of troops there.
Right.
There will be even more casualties if we have a lot of troops there without a clear plan, a clear exit, you know, clear goals and metrics for being there. And to have all those things, you need actually a planning process, which we don't have. And that's how you get into forever wars. I would add, you know, that just now we saw a kind of ugly underside to all of this, where four of the troops to which you just referred, the bodies of four, were flown back to the United States. Typically, when that kind of thing happens, the president or the Secretary of Defense are there to receive the bodies. Neither Trump nor Hegseth were there. You know, neither one of them showed them the respect that they were due. And it's pretty disgusting. And, you know, we go back, you remember Mark Milley commenting that, or others commenting that Trump viewed soldiers that die in battle as losers.
Suckers, losers and suckers. I think it was his chief of staff, right?
That's Kelly? Right. It was General Kelly.
Yeah. And who lost his son. I mean, he says this to a father who lost his son in battle.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really get more repugnant than that unless Kelly actually happens to overhear it at a ceremony marking D-Day. You know, I mean, it was even worse, right? It was even worse than that. And Trump is, his attitudes towards the dead and wounded are pretty awful. What we have going on here is not a war of choice or a war of whim. It's the product of a diseased mind. It's a product of somebody who's trying to cover up his problems at home, you know, express his manhood to the world, you know, push death to the, you know, away from, I mean, there's so many things going on, but they're not the result of consultation with Congress, consultation with generals, consultation with advisors. It's all going on, you know, in the head of Donald Trump as he lies awake at night staring at the ceiling.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I got some polling number on the war, and I think I mentioned this, that 23% are in favor of the war. Is that going to end the war quicker? Is that going to end the war sooner? How about weighing in on where this war is going to go? I mean, we don't know.
No, first of all, we have to begin with, we don't know. We also have to explore the possibilities of unintended consequences. Those include spreading in ways we don't expect. We're sending in the Kurds in northern Iraq, ostensibly to distract the Iranian army. Of course, Kurds pose other issues for the Turks and for the Syrians, for the Iraqis, and could trigger spreading of the war. Clearly, the message of this war is we wouldn't have attacked Iran if they had nuclear weapons. And so you do have this escalation of nuclear arms race, whether it's Poland or whether it's Scandinavia or whether it's Korea or whether it's Japan. Lots of other countries are saying that they want to get into that game. That's a problem. You've got the possibility with the number of missiles that are hitting the GCC and other Arab states, that they're going to get in a much bigger way, and that is going to spread and expand this conflict. If the Iranians have their big military weapons taken away from them, they have to go to terrorism as a mechanism for extending their power and disrupting.
And they're good at that.
They're the leading state sponsor of terror for 20 years in a row, 30 years in a row. But I would add that if we think that somehow, as Trump naively did, that we're going to go in, blow up some bases, blow up some missile plants, and that there is the people are going to take to the streets and we are going to be greeted as liberators, I think he needs to have a conversation with Condi Rice, who thought that was going to happen in Baghdad. What is much more likely, since there are these big institutions, is that the hard right is going to gain some momentum with a lot of the country. And we've seen that because Khamenei, who you expressed that you love, you know, his son, you should be happy to hear, is likely to replace him. And the IRGC is getting stronger. And so I think we should expect intense resistance from all or a chunk of Iranians for a long time to come. There are a lot of Iranians who still believe in the revolution, and they are not going to be defeated unless there's a substantial number of boots on the ground for a substantial period of time. And all I can say is you can bomb Iran for the next year, and they will still be more powerful than the Taliban was. And we were engaged in a war for 20 years in Afghanistan. So, you know, the likelihood that this is open-ended, messy, and produces unintended consequences is super high. But having said that, Donald Trump is a liar, and he will try to put a bow on it and say it was a huge success. He said it was a 15 out of 10, you know, so he is likely to go out there and say it's a success because he's going to be under huge pressure to change the subject. Now, I agree with Paul, you know, on the question, where will he go next? Because he will go to Cuba. I mean, you know, write that down. We will have some kind of intervention in Cuba. Will he go to Panama? Will he go to Greenland? Will he go to some other
place? Will that be easy?
Yeah, can I give you an example of how that becomes easy?
Yeah.
Shahed drones can fly, you know, dozens of miles. If he says there are Shahed drones in Cuba that could hit Miami, which because Shahed drones are now hitting the entire region, that will be the emerging threat over the next couple of weeks. You will see cheap $40,000, $50,000 drones that can be spread all over the region and potentially all over the world. That will be the new threat. That will be the new suicide bomber. That will be what they scare the world with, because it is a legitimate threat, but it can be manipulated. I think to answer your question, Al, in a very important way, we are not in charge of this right now. We think that America can still control these events. Mm-hmm. We are not respected, we are not trusted, and we are not in control. And every enemy gets a vote, and every ally gets a vote. So I think the idea that we can even control what happens next is grounded in the past, and grounded in a world where people used to respect America.
How much of that is Trump?
Well, most of it, most of it. But to use as an example, right? If the Saudis feel a threat, they can act. If the Israelis feel a threat, they can act. If Poland feels a threat from Russia, they can act. We don't control these countries anymore. And we don't have authority. We have influence, and we can threaten them. But, you know, Poland is on the line between Russia's advance, and America's hung them out to dry. So why should Poland wait for America? Nobody's waiting for America anymore. And that might be the understory here that Trump may not fully say, which is Israel might have been going anyway. Israel might have said, we're going anyway. And do you want to come along for the ride or not? And Trump thinks it's an easy win. So he says, sure, let's jump on board and keep everything rolling after Venezuela. But the most central thing to remember, especially now, is what we have done is blown the top off of it. And now everything is spilling out everywhere, and we can't control all of it.
I would say, by the way, though, Al, in response to your point about how much is Trump, we have not seen a world since Hitler blew his brains out in the bunker in which the diseased mind of a single individual has played a bigger role in driving global affairs. That Donald Trump is playing a huge role in not just the Middle East, but clearly in Ukraine and blowing up NATO, in changing the strategic equation for the Chinese. And watch this space. There's a meeting between Trump and Xi Jinping at the end of this month. And Trump is going to seek the warm embrace of Xi Jinping. He does not want a conflict there. If I were in Taiwan, I would be extremely nervous about what's going to happen next there, because I think, you know, the kind of wink and a nod, go ahead, is not out of the question. But the point behind this is Trump doesn't have advisors that he listens to. The Congress doesn't control Trump. Trump doesn't care about polls, I think, because Trump knows he's the lamest of lame duck. He's dying, and he's a narcissist. And as far as he's concerned, once he's dead, the world doesn't exist anymore. And so, Trump is the first time that we have seen the resources of the United States, a commander in chief who's acting like a king instead of a president.
And it's also the first time we don't have our friends. More than half of the people of Denmark think that we're an adversary. The Canadians are furious. We do not have allies.
So you don't think we can get Denmark involved in this Iran thing to
no.
help us out?
No, not unless Denmark starts getting hit, right? I mean, that's a great example. Like, you know, they are going to support their NATO allies, but right now they are still legitimately concerned. They haven't forgotten about Greenland. I have so many Danish friends, especially veterans that I've heard from, that are still forever deeply wounded and will never come back to support America because of what he said about Danish soldiers, about dead Danish. And that's
didn't they have a higher percentage of casualties than we did? In
per capita, absolutely. I mean, they fought alongside guys like me in Iraq. But I think it's important because we are becoming more and more isolated. I think David's points are exactly right. The global order is not built for a renegade president, but it's also not going to tolerate it. Right. So, yeah, France is going to jump in on Iran because they, you know, see an opportunity or they see a threat. But they're not going to jump in on Cuba and they're not going to jump in on Ecuador. And we are so isolated. And the way we feel about Trump is probably not even as intense as the rest of the world feels. So we have to remember he's our delegate to the world and nobody likes him. We pissed off everybody. So how'd you like to be in a global or a regional war when nobody likes you? That's the reality of what we've got right now. And China's the big winner, too. We should underscore that. I don't know if I were China, I would just sit back and wait and say, hey, you know what? America, punch yourself out. Russia, punch yourself out, because the big winner right now is China. And they have a multi-hundred year strategy. They are just waiting and building and watching everybody else punch themselves out. And people like, pray to God for Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who's the new General Milley. The institutions may not hold, but our leaders and our values can hold, especially locally.
Now, Kane was saying that we're going to run out of ammo, right? I mean, do we have the missiles to do this?
Not forever. No. You know, I mean, and that's the important point is he's underscoring tomorrow they're meeting with defense contractors to talk about replenishing supplies. That would have been a good idea to do a month ago or 2 months ago. Now they're talking about how to get Americans out of harm's way.
Do you get the sense that there wasn't a lot of planning for this operation? I'm sorry.
Come on.
It's all Trump. I think here's the thing. It's not just that they don't plan. They don't care about that. They're going so full speed and he is outrunning everything, including his own advisors. So everybody is the dog chasing the runaway drunken car that is Donald Trump. He doesn't care about American casualties. We know that. He doesn't care that we're spending $1 billion. He wants to sit down with Xi and say, I'm a big tough guy. You're a big tough guy. Let's divide the world. It's all about his power.
Is there any sense at all that this was a distraction from Epstein? Any sense at all? Or
are you kidding? Serious? You're joking, right?
No.
Of course it was a distraction from Epstein.
Okay.
I mean, this was as wag the dog gets. And the reality is it has been a pretty ineffective distraction. You know, Epstein is going to remain front and center.
I mean, because he has a pretty serious charge against him that we don't know if it's true or not. There are 3 million documents out there that unless they turn in every one of them, if they don't turn in one document, you know, that document's bad.
I actually have a different view on this, Alan. I think it's repeated too often. Everything is viewed as a distraction from Epstein. And what I would tell you is Epstein is friction for everything he wants to do. Like, he wants to rule the world. He's grew from Despicable Me. He wants the moon. He wants to put it in his pocket. And Epstein is one of the things that will slow him down from getting it. But it's not always a distraction from Epstein. everything he does, ICE and everything, like right. a lot of it is a power grab, and Epstein is slowing him down. And I think we have to kind of decouple the two. Epstein is incredibly important in holding him accountable. Maybe that's what will get Republicans to move. Maybe that's what will get him impeached and ultimately stopped. But everything he does is not necessarily a distraction from Epstein any more than public accountability or polls. They're all friction that are slowing him down from going as far and as fast as he can.
David, any last words?
No.
Okay. That's one word. All right, you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Thank you, David. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Keep the faith.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.